I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Figure. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they sink sardines. Will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
I understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Well, take him out, son. I mean that. Take him.
So, welcome back. I'm trusting, hoping, fingers crossed, that we're all safe and well, no matter what country or continent that we're listening to this in. I am Richard Keys.
And I am Andrew Gree.
At some distance, and we'll explain the reason for the delay and the slight difference in the sound quality in just a moment. But do subscribe, please. Follow us wherever you are and wherever you get your pods from. If you like what you hear, rate us, please, and leave a review. We will be very grateful. Plenty of reaction to our guest last week, Joey Barton, who I thought Andy was absolutely brilliant. I mean, I loved his honesty. And I promise that we will be hearing from him again as long as he's happy to join us. But I think we'll certainly be extending the invitation, agreed?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Joey, whether you like Joey or whether you don't like Joey, and I think there's a pretty, he'd admit himself, he's pretty 50-50 around the country. But he doesn't mess about. He doesn't try and cover it up. He tells it as he sees it. He calls it as he sees it. And you're right, he's a very honest young man. I enjoyed it. I enjoy his company as well when he's in Qatar with us.
And at 50-50, he's doing better than me. Mine's more probably 70-30, 80-20.
No, I think you're bigging yourself up there, son. I think you're more 80-20 if you want me to be truthful.
We actually did get a bit of stick for one of the topics last week, our conversation on the strengths of Brendan Rodgers, which I have to say I'm surprised about because, I mean, timing on the back of that was impeccable. Leicester, of course, went top, albeit only for 24 hours, but they are in a title race. And I do wish him and I do wish them all the very, very best. And I would love to see them repeat what they did when they took us by surprise. I mean, I don't think this would be this time, do you?
No, I don't. Why did we get stuck? What was the stick about?
I just think that Brendan is Brendan divides opinion as well, and I've always said I like a smattering of words that Ray Wilkins would use just so that I can continue to pretend that he's with us, Andy. I still miss the guy, so he can be a tad verbose, and I think that's what turns people off. But his success. And it is that since leaving Liverpool, I think has been extraordinary. From someone who couldn't win a trophy, got close, but very, very close with the league title, became a serial winner in Scotland, and might get Leicester over the line. Anyway, so where others fear to tread, we go. Our friends in the media, Andrew, eventually catch up. Reactions, please, to Twitter and Instagram at Keys. And Grey Pod. You have to spell it out. Keys and Grey Pod. So, on that basis, terrific to see Paul Pogba in such good form against both Burnley and Fulham. And such a pity he didn't play at Anfield.
You've been very naughty, Mr. Keys. Very naughty. I know what you mean. Paul Pogba's talent is there. It has not shone as much as it should have done at Old Trafford. The boy has talent. right? That's an absolute no-brainer. He has immense talent. The problem is he hasn't shown it in the games where he's needed to. Big players influence big games. The games that really, really matter. Now, Manchester United fans will maybe holler and scream, well, that mattered that day. We were 1-1 and we needed a second goal. Fine, yes. Somebody else might have got you a second goal and maybe could have got you a second goal. But when it really matters in the big ones, in the big games, in the Champions League, in title deciders, in big FA Cup ties, let Paul go and influence those games in the manner he has done against Burnley and Fulham. Then we can begin to get back to seeing the Paul Pogba we thought that United had signed all these years ago.
Yeah, but Nigel de Jong talks about, he played against him when he was in Italy. Nigel always talks about the Pogba he knows. But, Andy, I'm not sure any of us truly know. Back to what? He's never really, ever really. I mean, even in that World Cup success, he was on the periphery, wasn't he? I've never really seen him take a game by the scruff of the neck in minute one, as Jose would say, and boss it until minute 95. I've never seen it. So I don't know what it is that he's looking to get back to being.
I mean, I'm sitting here trying to think. He's been there, what, 3 or 4 years now, is it, at United?
He's certainly must been be at there. Three, yeah.
Yeah, certainly. And I look back over the, and I'm not a United fan, so they would know more about it than me, but I can only think of a couple. I remember the City game away from home when he scored 2 goals in the second half, influenced the game there. That was a big moment, but that was purely the scoring, I think, 2 headers, was it, he scored that day? And then the game that they talk about, he influenced that against Spurs away when they beat them, they nicked that win. When actually, it was actually David Ayer was man of the match that day, but Paul got credited with being fantastic that day and dictating the game. But apart from that, the big games when Paul's been needed and Paul's been, you're saying, go on then, stand up, go on, big man, show us what you're made of, show us what you can do. It hasn't come through often enough. I'm not saying never, because they'll rear up and say, yeah, he has that. Yes, but it's not been shown often enough for the type of money they pay for a top player.
One ball, which got the scorer away, Rashford, I think, at Tottenham.
Mm. And yeah, it was Rashford.
I haven't seen it, Andy. Anyway, people are looking around for reasons. I've got one, a very good one. Perhaps Mino Raiola has said, listen, there's no money about. Real Madrid haven't got any. Barcelona, Juve are toiling. Maybe, son, we might be better off where we are. So keep your mouth shut. I'll close mine and see how we go. I think that probably is an explanation to how things have turned. As far as the quality of the sound is concerned, I did say we'd explain that. I'm sitting in Qatar. My colleague is, I don't know how many thousands of miles away, Andy, but having travelled in a very safe COVID bubble by arrangement between here and the Maldives, you're sat in an overwater villa somewhere.
Yes, I am, Richard. Yeah, flown and double tested and in a very safe, secure COVID bubble here. And it's a little piece of normality after you know, the year that everybody's had throughout the world. But I should be back with you on Tuesday, son. Don't worry.
It reminds me very affectionately of Fridays at Talk Sport, where I think your schedule was travel down from the Midlands on a Monday, back Tuesday, travel down
Wednesday,
or back Monday. Yeah, you had 2 overnight stay. But Friday, importantly, that's what I was trying to get to. Friday, you'd work from home. And you know what? They never sussed us. So I think we did okay. I think it's standard practice now. All radio programs are presented from home. But I mean, 2 wonderful years, and it was fun. It was really good fun. So to change subject, what of Frank Lampard and the struggles that he is currently having at Chelsea?
Wow. Well, there's no doubt that there was questions before the Leicester game. There's certainly more questions after it. Listen, this is a strange season, Keezy. 5 games ago, Liverpool were top of the league, had just thumped Crystal Palace 7-2, had just beaten Tottenham the week before that. Everyone's saying, unless you finish above Liverpool, you're not going to win the title. 5 weeks later, they're saying Liverpool have gone, Liverpool are done, they're not the team they were. It's that kind of season. Chelsea were top of the league. Look what's happened there now. You know, Manchester United started badly, coming back now top of the league. City, they're gone, they're done 7 games ago. Now, if they win the game in hand, they'd go top. So it's a really difficult season to sit down and analyse properly because of what's going on with COVID, who's missing, who's not missing. We don't know how many players are actually missing from COVID or not on a weekly basis when they don't play. But I think Frank's got, I've said it to you before, pardon me, he's got an abundance of luxury footballers. But I don't think he's yet, it's not his fault, it does take time when so many come in. I don't think as yet, and he might tell me I'm wrong, that if I said, here's your, you've got a Champions League final coming up tomorrow, where's your best team? And unequivocally, could he then say, that's my best team? Because if he can, I think, and it's not for me to tell Frank Lampard, I think he should play that team more, if that's his best. Yes, you can drop players out easy. Drop them out, give them a week's rest, yeah, maybe a couple. But not change it, continually change your players and rotate them the way Frank's done. And I don't think that gets you to consistency. It really doesn't. You look at what United have done. They're far more consistent in their selection policy these days. So are Manchester City now. Leicester most certainly are. Tottenham, they are. You know, these teams pick pretty much the same team, nine players, if they can, on a weekly basis. And I don't think Frank does.
I said to you the other night when we were working on BeIN Sports, it's easy for all of us to have a view from afar. We don't really know. I mean, you talk about COVID. Kai Havertz was COVID positive. Is he suffering with long COVID? I'm not looking to make excuses, but I'm like you. I just think Frank would find a 1-11 right now and play it for 5 or 6 games, get some confidence back in the club and some belief back in the club, and then maybe start to play around. But this week, Havertz and Hudson-Odoi, and I just thought he was asking for trouble. Then he went and got it. And now, of course, he's under huge pressure. I don't apologise for nailing my colours to his mast. I hope that Chelsea have the good sense to carry on and let him see this period through. How many times have you said down the years you find out more about yourself as a player and a coach when things aren't going well? And this is a spell probably that Frank hasn't previously faced.
No.
And it won't do him any harm ultimately.
Well, he hasn't, Dickie, because, you know, he got to the playoff finals with Derby his first season as a coach. So there's no real disappointment that season, apart from not losing off in the playoff finals. And then he takes Chelsea to the Champions League in his first season in the Premier League as a coach. So he's not had to, it's been pretty much all up, up, up. He's learned far more this season than he's ever learned about himself as a coach, about his players, about his staff, and this last period than ever won. Jurgen Klopp will be learning more about himself and one or two of his players that he maybe never knew that existed in them. And this, that, and the other. He'll be learning far more in the last 5 weeks about all of this than he's learned in the last 2 years when it's been absolutely seamless, the success that they've had. And that's easy. These coaches will tell you that. Jurgen would tell you that, Jurgen Klopp. He would say, it's far easier to be a coach when my team's winning every week. It's much more difficult to be a coach when you're John Dyche, who did what he did to them last night. You know, it's far more difficult being Sean Dyche as a coach than it is being Jurgen Klopp. That's for sure, Keezy.
And to those of you who have contacted me saying, look what Burnley did, went and sat in, nicked a goal. Yes, that was my point at the weekend. If I'm Burnley, I've got every right to do that. If Manchester United had gone and won the football match, a game that they should have done, if they'd gone and played in Liverpool's half, they'd be 2 points better off now and Liverpool would be out of the title race. It was there to be won.
Are you not talking about that?
No, I'm not, because the Liverpool Echo this week have been quoting wrongly. I didn't say Liverpool were scared to death of Manchester United. I said United were frightened of Liverpool. They didn't need to be. Go and play in their half. Win the game. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they didn't, and they might end up paying a big price. Two other subjects before our guests join us. I did wonder, Andy, the week before last when Nuno was talking about We need to keep playing because of this threat of a Super League. And I'm saying to myself, well, what threat? I've heard no more. And then this week, the Times for two consecutive days, Thursday, Friday, start talking about it. FIFA have taken it so seriously that they've said if players and clubs join it, then you can't play in the World Cup finals. Well, I think that's an absolute nonsense, because without the top players, then the World Cup is not that. And it would suffer as a result. And the other thing here, which I think it tells me that this is more likely, more quickly than ever we thought, 12 clubs would qualify for FIFA's new Club World Cup. Now that is Infantino's baby. That he wants clubs to be part of. That tells me that this is just round the corner now, because the other thing which I found fascinating in the suggestion of how it would be set up, it would not adversely affect domestic leagues. Matches would be played in midweek and clubs would still play in their respective domestic leagues. So I think this is a goer. I think this is a replacement for the Champions League, and I think it is very much on the cards for a start, if not next season, then the one after. And that, I think, Andy, is what Nuno was referring to. Whether or not by playing in this, that does mean that you're not quite as strong in the domestic league and you don't take it as seriously. I don't know, but I think Super League now is on, absolutely on, more than off.
Well, I don't know. Listen, we know football's changing almost on a monthly basis. There's all sorts of ideas. This one you've touted for a while now, and you've remained convinced over the years that it will happen. Me less so. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I do believe we have to protect our national league. I'm 100% behind Nuno Espirito Santo there. I think we do. Mm. But what is the point of playing? What's the point in Wolves winning the Premier League, let's say, for instance, if they can't go and play in the Champions League or the equivalent?
Well, I was looking at 15 founder clubs. So that's 50.
And
so
five in
there. Yes, that's maybe why Nuno was suggesting that he was not overly convinced by this. But listen, football evolves, and you and I are not in a position to cast judgment in that respect.
We
were part of its evolvement in 1992. Mm. So we can't exactly change horses now, can we? One last one before, again, we introduce our guest, who I'm very much looking forward to spending time with this week. Perfectly timed guest. Well, that's why we do it.
We get lucky again.
Manchester City's first goal the other night, still cannot get my head round. Now, they can talk to me as long as they like, and I have spoken to many about the specifics of the law. And they might be correct in the way they interpreted the law, but they are not correct when it comes to spirit of the game. And my mind went back to an FA Cup tie at Leicester that Bolton played in. Do you remember?
Uh-huh.
And they stuck, Big Sam put two players on posts at free kicks well beyond Leicester's defensive line, caused chaos. Winning goal came as a result. And it was later subsequently decided it was against the spirit of the game.
Correct.
Why on earth have the PGMOL once again given themselves a problem that they did not have to create? If they'd blown the other night, if John Moss just whistles and says offside, you're offside because you're headed to the ball and you got yourself involved, therefore I can't let this develop, no one would have complained. Nobody.
No.
Now we have a complete and utter mess with people looking, Keith Hackett today, looking for changes in the offside law so that it only applies in the penalty box. No, just be sent. Ralph Hasenhüttl saying, oh, this is interesting. We can stand two beyond the back line now and have them get involved as and when. It just beggars belief, the stupidity of these people that interpret only in our league, Andy, only in our league, again, in this manner. It just is mind-boggling. Sorry, I meant to ask a question, not pass an opinion.
No, you pass an opinion. I like it, because I'll tell you that we've got a band of people there at the PGMOL who are so scared to admit they're wrong. Quite simply, they could have just turned up and said, by the way, that was wrong. Even after it, and said, we got that wrong. But they don't. They try and fudge it. I was very particular to read this. Now, Rodri coming back from miles offside as the ball's played up towards Tyrone Mings. Their description was he was played onside because Tyrone Mings deliberately played the ball to Rodri, which made him onside. Well, that's a lie for a start, because he didn't deliberately play the ball to Rodri. He was controlling it on his chest because he didn't know Rodri was behind him. And then and correct me if I'm wrong here, Keith, because I've been away, I've watched the goal. But then Rodri, in my opinion, comes, tackles him and wins the ball. Would that be what you saw?
That would be what I saw.
Exactly. So that's not Mings playing the ball deliberately to Rodri. That's Rodri coming from offside, getting involved, winning a tackle, taking possession from Tyrone Mings. So therefore, as soon as it came up towards him and he made his move towards the ball, he's offside. End of.
You see, he has to be, because Mings otherwise could have let that ball drop over his head, turned, and played it back to his goalkeeper. But the fact that Rodri was there, he almost certainly got a shout. He, for me, miscontrolled, because he's under the pressure that he didn't expect of Rodri being on his shoulder, and then loses the football. So Rodri has to make himself active. He is interfering with the ability of another player on the pitch as a result of having been offside and coming back into what then is regarded as onside. It's just absolute bollocks. No, it really is.
I don't know.
Mark Clattenburg, who's head of referees in Greece, and I texted him this week and said, what do you think? He said, well, he thinks like we think. Why do the PGMOL always create their a problem? He says here, there's an argument that Rodri immediately challenged Minks for the ball so the Villa defender had not got full control of it. Well, yes, he did, but he shouldn't have been able to challenge him for the ball.
No.
He's offside.
No. He gained an unfair advantage from coming from offside.
Of course.
A total unfair advantage. It's ridiculous. It's one of the worst things I've seen for a long time, and that's me saying a lot regarding VAR. That's me saying an awful lot. It was a simple
where we decision. Go, Andy, it was. Having opened the door, I don't know where we go now. A piece in the Telegraph here. Football was warned last night that the door is open for teams to abuse the offside law. Well, it is. Ralph Hasenhüttl said it creates opportunities. Well, it does. And yet, everything that we saw, even if they were right, that the law was adhered to and they interpreted it as a result, the spirit of the game was broken and that goal should not have stood. And Villa, by the way, had been fantastic.
No.
And I don't even think the second one's a pen, but there we are. That's open too.
No, they were unlucky, Villa. You're right. But that one, it's a brilliant. I mean, they give us a laugh every now and again, PGMOL, but it's not a laugh because it's a football team's future. It's their, you know, survival or what is regarded by these, judged by these guys. Sometimes, I mean, it just beggars belief. The Rodri one, I mean, I'm sorry. I really am sorry. So you could just stick somebody in the corner now, just leave them up there
yes,
and say,
can.
Right,
yep.
Knock the ball in there. As soon as they get it, right, we're on top of them. Go and take it off them. I mean, it's just,
You just, what you do then is you stand two beyond the last defender, you smash the ball on top of the head of that defender, and then you mug him from behind. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's, well done, that, by the way, that was a perfect summation of it. Mug him from behind. That's exactly what happened. I don't mind. And yet, Rodri didn't gain an advantage. Oh, come on, guys.
Right. Our guest this week, I'd like to discuss many things with. I hope we get the opportunity to. I'd like to discuss, Andy, Leeds United.
Yes.
Will they ever be better than 14th to 10th, the way they play and the approach that Bielsa has to the game? I also want to ask him, what on earth happened? How can you be a Champions League semi-finalist one season? I know he didn't play in it. He was on the bench, but relegated the next. And also Nick Pope, who was fantastic again last Thursday. We're recording Friday. How long before he establishes himself as England's number one? As this guy used to be, our guest... I haven't got a drum roll.
The drum roll. We haven't given anyone else a drum roll. Come off it.
Well, he's a good mate. He's a friend of ours at BeIN Sports. It's the former England keeper, Paul Robinson. Robbo, how are you doing?
Yeah, really well, thank you, Richard. Well, I am this morning now, after 19 days of having that horrible virus.
You got hit, yeah?
Yeah, got it about 3 weeks ago. Me and the missus both got it. She got it for a week. She was fine after a week or so, but she still can't taste or smell anything. I got every single thing they could throw at you after about 8 days, breathing, chest and everything. But as I say, about 19 days in now, just about back to normal.
Blimey, Robbo, you're a fit boy, thank goodness. I mean, it sounds as though you were hit seriously.
Yeah, after about 8 days, I thought, do you know what, that's not too bad. And then it's really strange because it comes in waves. And then you think you're getting better. And after about 8, 9 days, it just went straight to my chest and it affected my breathing. Thought I was going to have to go in and get oxygen at one point. My oxygen levels were so low. But the last couple of weeks, it slowly rectified itself. Still not 100%. Still having night sweats and horrible stuff. It's lingering around.
Oh,
but no, I'm almost there with it. Thank you.
You actually do sound a little breathless. Yeah. No, I'm serious. Well,
I just thought that was doing our show, Keezy. Come on, I thought you should be breathless because you're doing the show.
It's the excitement of seeing you two boys again.
We miss you, Robbo. We really do.
It's been far too long, hasn't it?
Yes. Listen, a couple of things that we were just discussing before you joined us. The first one has to be, thoughts please, were you still keeping goal on how on earth you defend the madness that unfolded at Manchester City this week when Rodri was deemed to be onside before mugging Tyrone Mings and City scored their first goal as a result?
I just can't see the logic in the rule. I mean, yes, we've seen rule changes. We've seen handball rule changes. The offside's been changed however many times this season with those stupid lines that they draw across the pitch every week. But that one, it's just blatantly obvious. I mean, how can somebody not be offside when they're stood 10 yards behind, at least 10 yards behind the last defender? But then as soon as he touches it, it becomes active. Listen, the referees and the officials have played to the rules that they've been told, but the rules that they've been told to play by are completely ludicrous.
Well, only in England, honestly. It's only in our league. I just said to Andy, if Mings has to be aware of him, so therefore he's interfering. Otherwise, he could put his duck underneath that, let the ball roll to his keeper. I mean, it just beggars. I said it before you came. Almost speechless. Happily, I found the words to batter them with, but they've created a problem now.
You did a good job.
Yeah, they've created a problem now that we didn't need, that they didn't need.
Well, what are they expecting Tyrone Mings to do? Just leave the ball? You can't do that as a central defender. You can't just leave the ball. I mean, I was watching the Liverpool-Burnley game last night. Be offside when they don't put the flag up, when he's clearly offside, 3 or 4 yards offside. They let the play go on until they've had a shot or a goal kick or something. Literally 30 seconds, a minute, the game goes on, and then everybody knows it's offside, and then the linesman puts his flag up. It's ridiculous.
Well, it was Ben Mee.
What's going to happen, Robbo? Keezy and I have pointed out, what's going to happen? Someone is going to get badly injured. Something's going to get through, blatantly offside. Keeper's going to come out, either the keeper or the forward. One of them is going to get badly injured, and they're going to go, oh, well, sorry about that.
Yeah, something's going to happen. I mean, VAR is there for the offside decisions. Lines, there's no point in linesmen at the moment because they're not even putting the flag up for anything. They're just waiting for the game to stop.
No, there isn't. But you know how it'll develop, chaps? It's something, again, Andy, you and I have discussed a lot. If Arsene Wenger gets his way and Pierluigi Collina, it will be technical that offside is decided by the equipment rather than the lino. So, again, we've changed the rules to accommodate Guardiola to a larger degree. Now we change the rules to accommodate those that invented VAR. Again, that's something else that I just don't understand. It was a good game. 5 years ago, we had a fabulous game. We've bemused and baffled ourselves with all these changes. Don't understand. No need for it. How would it change your job, Robbo, in goal waiting?
Well, it's a strange thing because you always knew that on the pitch as a player, Andy will tell you, you knew whether you're offside or not, and you knew whether a player was offside or not. Players, I mean, unless it's a ridiculously tight decision, then it's down to the linesman's opinion. You always had a real good hunch and a good idea whether it was offside or not, but you're always taught to play to the whistle. But I mean, when's the whistle going to come now? They're not even waiting for the whistle. They're waiting for the game to stop. They're waiting for the ball to go out of play. They're waiting for the goalkeeper to make a save and then the rebound and then it go out for a corner. Oh, hang on, we'll bring it back for offside 5 minutes ago. It really is becoming a farce.
How good, you mentioned Burnley, how good is Nick Pope and how long is it going to be before he establishes himself as England's number one?
Yeah, he was outstanding again last night, wasn't he? I think he's got all the attributes. I think the only thing that he does lack a little bit is his footwork, which I know he works very hard on with Billy Mercer. And I think that's the only thing that holds him back from being a top class goalkeeper. I think England have got three good goalkeepers at the moment. Dean Henderson's lacking with his amount of game time. Gareth was quite clever in the last international meetup, really, the way that he played it with the media with Jordan Pickford. He knew that he was his best and only option at that time. Nick Pope was playing in a Burnley time that was struggling. Dean Henderson wasn't playing. And he gave Jordan Pickford his 100% back and said he's England's number one, which you don't often see England managers doing. I certainly didn't get that backing at the time when I was playing.
There's a reason for that.
Come on, you did so much, big man. Come on.
It's a good job I've got a short memory, Andy. It's a good job your memory's not good.
Robbo, of the three you mentioned, right, let's just say they're all at the top of their game, right? What decision would Gareth make, and why would that person be the number one?
Well, at the moment, Jordan Pickford's the man in possession. And if he plays well and continues to play well, he'd have no reason to change him. It's going to be a matter of him having the dip in form, his inconsistent form continuing. I personally think his form's improved. It's got better. I don't think it's at the level that he wants it at yet. Whereas Nick Pope is getting better week in and week out. It's going to be a big decision for the manager to take the current number one out. But Nick Pope's given him every problem and every possibility that he could do that. And we don't know what's going to happen with Dean Henderson. He may play well between now and the end of the season. We've got Sam Johnston, who's playing fantastically well at West Brom. And we've got Carl Darlow at Newcastle, who's also playing extremely well.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it extraordinary, Robbo, that you know, again, how the game's changed. You're talking about he's not particularly good with his feet. See, I always thought a goalkeeper's primary purpose was to keep the ball out of the net.
Yeah, well, I'm a dinosaur like you two, and I completely agree with you. But the game has evolved, and we've got to change with the game and what managers are wanting goalkeepers to do now. He's not particularly good with his feet, but he's not as good as the rest with his feet. It's something that he's worked very, very hard on with goalkeeper coach Billy Mercer. I know that. I was at Burnley when he first came, and his left foot was almost non-existent at the time. So he's put a lot of hours and a lot of effort into it. But as you say, the primary job of a goalkeeper is keeping the ball out of the net. And Nick Pope's very good at shot stopping. He's the best that I've seen in the Premier League for aerial balls, commanding his box. There's nobody better that comes for crosses. You saw in the last minute at Anfield last night.
Yeah.
Liverpool's corner piled everybody into the box. He comes out last night, takes it clean, calm, game over. Takes a lot of pressure off the defence.
Mm. Good news on being a dinosaur, by the way, and welcome if indeed you now consider yourself to be so. They did rule the world for 300 million years, Robbo, so there's plenty left.
Correct. And they have Robbo, the one thing is they're very difficult to get rid of, honestly, they really are.
is that the longevity that you two lads have got, yeah?
Right, next subject. Leeds United, can they ever be better than 14th to 10th if they continue to play the way they do?
I tell you what, I'd take that this year though, Keezy. I think it's a little bit hard to say that can they ever be better between 14th and 10th with what they've achieved this year and the budget that they've got. You look at the nucleus of the squad and the players that they've got. Yes, they've spent 100 million in, you know, about 100 million this summer, but that in relation to what everyone else has spent and everyone else's budget in the Premier League is a drop in the ocean. I think they can with better players, but it's getting better players to do what the manager wants and the demands that he puts on them. I think they've done hugely well this season. I think they'll finish mid-table. But the demands that the manager puts on players and his recruitment policy in signing a certain type of player to fit a certain type of way that he wants to play is never going to change. How long the manager is going to be around, we don't know. I mean, this is the longest that he's ever stayed at a football club, which is, you know, it's a huge achievement for Leeds United to be able to keep him there. But the problem that Leeds will have eventually, in my opinion, is when he does decide to move on, when he does decide to go to pastures new, whenever that may be, how are they going to change? The change is going to be huge. It's not just going to be a manager like for like. The changes that he's made at the training ground, the changes that he's made at the stadium, because he's so individual, because he's so unique, what's the contingency program? It's going to be a huge upheaval if that day does come.
What if they move him on?
If he's not going to change, like you say, if he's not going to change and you think he's set in his ways and he's almost his ideas are set in stone, is he going to be happy, you know, finishing top 10 just about, scoring 65 goals, conceding 65 goals, winning 10, losing 10, drawing 10? I mean, those kind of figures are what we're seeing at the moment. Is he going to be happy with that?
Can I just add to that? Is the owner? I mean, Leeds United should be competing for a place in the top four, and that won't get them there, will it?
Listen, I think in perspective, you've got to put it in perspective, lads. Let's walk before we can run. They've only just got promoted after 16 years of being out of the Premier League, and I think they're having an outstanding season in the Premier League. Yes, they have to develop. Yes, they have to grow, but that comes with time. That comes with another transfer window. That comes with better players. That comes with the manager understanding the league. I think with better players, they can achieve more. Defensively, they've got huge problems. They've conceded one of the second most goals, I think, in the Premier League. And the goalkeeper's made the second most saves in the Premier League, which is a glaring, you know, obvious that there's a problem at the back. Going forward, we all know what they can do. He has got one way of playing. It's plan A. if plan A doesn't work, you do plan A a little bit better. If that doesn't work, you try a little bit harder on plan A and make a couple of substitutes. And that's just the way that he does things. And some weeks they'll get beat 4 or 5-1. Some weeks they'll win 1 or 2-0. And that's just the roller coaster that it is at the moment. I think the fans are accepting it.
Oh, they're loving it.
Yeah, Rob, just one thing on the manager. Sorry, one more thing on the manager. Like, we saw Guardiola come into this league with views, and after a year, changed a little bit and changed the way he thought about it and tinkered with it. We saw Klopp come in his first year when he ran the legs off his players, and by January or February, they were run out, they were done. He modified what he believed was needed in a team. Those guys sort of changed a little bit. Has Bielsa got it in him to tinker and adjust with what he believes? Or is he so single-minded, he'll never change anything? Or not change it, just adjust things a little. Mm.
I think you'll have to, Andy. I think when you look at the goals that they're conceding and certain games, I mean, it's a learning process for him as well. It's a league that he's never managed in before. And I think he will have to come the end of the season. I mean, no team is going to survive comfortably conceding the amount of goals that they have done, because you're not always going to be guaranteed to create the amount of chances to score the goals they have. I think potentially he has to evolve at the end of the season. Defensively, I think that he has to change his ways or improve the defensive side of things in the transfer market by getting better players. Because defensively, conceding the amount of goals and chances they are doing, it's always going to be an uphill task to survive in a league that's, you know, the toughest league in the world, as we know.
I can't remember, Robert. It's back after 13 or 16 years. It's one or the other. But that got me to thinking today before we spoke. How on earth did Leeds United play in a Champions League semi-final one season and get relegated the next? How did that happen?
It was incredible, incredible times. I mean, you look back at the when I was there, you'd go into the dressing room, into training one day, and you'd be like, "Oh, you're still here? Oh, you're still here?" And it was crazy. I mean, we know Reedy really well, and Reedy was tasked with, you know, cutting the wage bill by almost 80%. And we had the season that Reedy kept us in the Premier League. We had loanees from all over the world that had no idea what it was like to play in the Premier League or to play for Leeds United. It was just one of the strangest times you could be in. I mean, who could ever imagine that Leeds United would ever play in the third tier English football?
Nobody.
It wasn't necessarily the Championship, it was League One and the depth that they got to. And in all honesty, some of the players and managers that represented that club were absolutely, you know, they've won the lottery to represent that club. You look at the managers and the players that have played for that club in the last, you know, obviously not recent times, but the maybe 13, 14 years when they're at the lowest ebb. It was unrecognisable from the sleeping giant as such as it was. I mean, sleeping giants used far too often, in my opinion. But I think for Leeds United, I think it's very, very
fitting. It does. Yeah, it does do. But you see, I'm very lucky. I can turn to Andy and say, what's it like to win a title? You score in a European Cup final. Well, Cup Winners' Cup, but European final. Score goals in the FA Cup, League Cup, get relegated. Had all kinds of different experiences. And one thing you always say is, well, you know, whatever's happening in the boardroom tends not to filter through. But again, in this case, are we talking about an exception that you guys were aware of the chaos that was happening and it did filter through to the dressing room?
Yeah, it absolutely did. I'd be lying if I said it didn't. I mean, you know, it got to the point of, you know, you were looking around in the dressing room every morning at training to see who was still there. And it was hard as a player because you knew that you weren't wanted. You were an asset and you had to be sold. I mean, my deal to Tottenham was done in the January.
Yeah.
I went down to White Hart Lane, had my medical, did everything, had all the contract ready to sign. And at the 11th hour, Leeds realised that they couldn't have me back on loan because they had too many players on loan. They needed the goalkeeper back, so the deal collapsed. So I went back in January for the second half of the season, knowing that I'd already been sold and that Tottenham they shook my hand and said they'd come back and revisit the transfer. They were good to their word at the end of the season. But as I said, players at that time, it was very hard not to know what was going on at the club because it was splashed over the front and back pages of every single newspaper every day as well.
So I'm just trying to work this deal out. Initially, you were going, I think, for $2.5 million, weren't you, in the January, to be loaned back until the end of the season. Didn't they then nick you for about $1.5 million?
I can't remember what the figures were, but the deal was done and agreed in the January, literally to the point of just about to put pen to paper at White Hart Lane. And Daniel Levy, to his credit, you know, a gentleman took my hand and said, we'll revisit this in the summer. And, you know, we I let in an unprecedented amount of goals and we got relegated. But he obviously still saw something in me and came back and got me.
Well, I think that was a plan, Keezy. I think there was a plan in January, said to Robbo, listen, Robbo, you nip back there to lead. Chuck in a few and we'll get you for a million less than we should have done.
How different was it then to the year you went with Blackburn, if at all? Does it still taste sour?
There's a lot of similarities, yeah, because of the upheaval off the field with the new owners, the Denkis coming in. The change of management, the number of times we changed management, and from a football club that went from a sound, financially well-run Premier League football club, the one that I signed for, with John Williams in charge, to you know the Venky's in charge and the chaos that followed that with the potential of the chickens and Steve Keane and everything else, you know, all the side show off the field. And it became very similar to Leeds United as well. I mean, I spent 7 years at Blackburn, six of which were really happy. I really enjoyed playing for a really good, well-run football club. But my last year or so at the club, I wasn't playing because I was on appearance money. I wasn't playing because they wanted rid of me. And, you know, it just tarnished the whole experience of being there. But it was a very, very, it wasn't to the extreme of Leeds United, but it was very similar because of the off-field event. I mean, Steve Keane was put in charge and the Venkies have never had a football club, never run a football club, and they were being advised. Steve Keane was running the whole football club. He wasn't just managing the team. He was reporting back to them. He was flying out to India every 3 or 4 weeks. And I don't know for definite, but, you know, he was running, going back, telling about ticket sales, about how the club job's going, about how everything's going, because he was their manager to manage their football club. I just know that it wasn't focused solely on football.
I mean, they promised Champions League football for £5 million, which was never going to happen, was it? But do we place any store by the suggestion that they didn't know you could be relegated from the Premier League when they bought it?
Well, you see, I don't know how true that is, Steve. I mean, there's a lot of stories and we hear things as players, as certain agents advising owners and everything. And you never actually get to find out the true story of what actually happened. I know there's three of the Venkies. There's the sister and the two brothers. Mm. The two brothers fronted it, but the sister, I think she was the madam. She made all the decisions and she had the final say on everything. As to their knowledge of the football, the English game or whatever, I really don't know as to what level they could or whether it was sold.
Well, it must be soul destroying when you're not playing simply because they can't afford to play and you sort of join the bomb squad. I mean, there's nowhere to go then, is there?
Mate, I think I was 35, 36 at the time. And Gary Bowie called me in at the time and went, look, we need to move you on. I'm not going to play. You're not going to be in the squad. But I'm not going to throw you around the world, you know, just sitting in the stand watching football, so long as you're not a bad egg in the dressing room and in the training ground. He said, I know you can't do that. He said, I know you're not that type of character. You're not that type of player. He said, but look, if you do all right by me, he said, I'll look after you kind of thing for the last 4 or 5 months. Because I said to him, quite honestly, I said, Gaffer, I'm 35. I've had a black operation. Yeah. I've had a blood clot on my lung. I've just got back fit again the last 12 months or so. I've just started playing. I'm not going to get this contract anywhere else for 6 months. Do they think I'm crazy if I'm going to leave at Christmas with like 6 months left on my contract? So I wasn't going anywhere. So it got to the point of like, I went to see Gary's and like the coaching staff and just like, Gaffer, it's half term this week. Can I have a couple of days off? Like, yeah, fine. No problem. You've got to go and take the kids away.
Well, at least they did right by you.
No, they were brilliant by you. The management and the staff, you can't fault anybody at Blackburn. To an extent, their hands were tied. I ended up going in 3 days a week towards the last couple of weeks, mate, playing badminton with the physios. It got to that point. it was so
destroying. Robbo, what's your team? What would you regard as your team? Somebody said, Robbo, like, what's your team?
Yeah, well, obviously, he's still living up here at Harrogate. I think Leeds are probably nudged ever so slightly over Spurs. Spurs, I had the best time and played my best football at and my best footballing memories. But Leeds gave me the grounding. I was there from when I was 12 years old and I left at 23. And living back up in the area now, I've got great relationships at the football club. My boys at the academy there, so I'm up there 3 nights a week. And I've got great relationships with that club. And since retiring and moving back home and having a lot more time home and in the media, Leeds are probably one of the teams that I've covered the most, and it's just grown my affinity back with them.
Good. Well, listen, continue to enjoy the gravy, my friend, up there, and stay safe.
I look forward to coming to see you soon and taking your money on the golf course.
Yeah, well, no, we look forward to you coming, but that would be a first if you took the money. But it has been...
Well, it would be because you're my partner, Keezy. It would be, yeah, you're right.
It's been great to catch up, Robbo. And on a serious note, take care, my friend. Make sure you do things right going forward.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you. And you look forward to seeing you soon. Yeah.
See you, Robbo. Thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, Andrew, Robbo.
Cheers, well, man. See you later.
Great. Great lad. Paul Robinson. Did that ever happen to you, Andy? Did you ever find yourself surplus to requirements and training with the bomb squad?
Not really. I found myself in the same sort of situation with Robbo when I had to go when Wolves were in administration, and every player was an asset, and we all had a price on our heads, and it was a case a bit like I was chuckling to myself when he was saying he used to walk in and see who's there and who's not. Well, it was the same at Wolves those years. He used to walk in and think, well, I wonder who'll be there this morning at training. And the guys would have had that one day, because one Thursday I left training keys as a Wolves player, and then in between Thursday morning and Friday morning, when the guys were back in again, I wasn't there. I was at Everton. So it was that kind of situation. You never knew where you were going to be.
Well, I do know that this time next week you'll be back here. Continue to enjoy your holiday.
Yep.
I keep repeating it, Andy. It's the same for everybody, but for goodness sake, stay safe, my friend. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can on Twitter and Instagram at Keys and Grey Pod. Keys and A-N-D Grey Pod. Thank you once again for your company this week. Subscribe, leave us a review, and we'll see you in 7 days. Thanks, Andy. Travel well.
Absolutely. Cheers, guys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.